Canada's home for sports. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
And the Celtics essentially being forced into, not to say this rebuild, but a retool, a restructuring, just mapping a different course, essentially.
100%. I mean, look, the original plan, and B-Rob can back me up on this, was you build around Kyrie Irving and the young guys come together. That's great. And if not, we ship the young guys out and we kind of bring in that next superstar or an Anthony Davis type to play with Kyrie Irving. And ultimately, at least they found out by January that Kyrie Irving probably wasn't on board. And that was pretty obvious with, you know, some of the stuff that was going on. But what's crazy, too, is you look back at it in the rookie year for Tatum in his postseason without Kyrie Irving. You kind of saw this.
Totally.
You saw this coming. And last year was frustrating because for a guy that looked poised to kind of take that next step last season,
he didn't
do it. And so then that kind of gives you pause. But man, especially the last couple weeks, he has been on another level. And all of a sudden you're looking at it and yeah, he's a legitimate dude that you can build around. And now it seems like you've got those two wings in Brown and Tatum. Moving forward, those are the two guys you clearly build around, and I think some of the other pieces are probably interchangeable, but you're set up here for a nice little run. I think this season, 2 seed in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Something like that. Yeah.
Bucks are, you know, you look at the numbers, they're, you know, on pace to be one of the best teams in league history. But if that's what the numbers tell you, at least. There's still something to me where it's like,
I don't,
Chris Middleton,
yeah,
Eric Bledsoe, ultimate, I don't know. I know Giannis is great, but. So we'll see what happens come playoff time. But, yeah, I think this is best-case scenario right now for the Boston Celtics.
Totally, because they were almost forced into this. And, listen, there are far worse options than building around two number three draft picks.
And two max contract
and
guys.
And two max contract guys. But this wasn't the plan.
No.
It was definitely not plan A. But it's a pretty damn good plan B. And the Celtics have gotten, I think, just about everything out of this they possibly could have hoped for, that with Kyrie leaving and Walker coming in, and all of a sudden it becomes more of Brown's team, it becomes more of Tatum's team, because it feels to me, McCone, like this is Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown's team. It's not Kemba Walker's team. It's not Gordon Hayward's team. It's their team. The torch is being passed, or maybe it's already been passed with the Celtics, and that's a good thing.
Well, I'll say this too, because the plan that was in place for Ainge and some of the moves that he made, give him credit, because you can say two number three picks. He also hit on those picks.
He did.
And there were a lot of people that wanted Chris Dunn instead of Jaylen Brown. I was one of them. Whoops. And then, you know, you look at the draft
Markel
with Tatum.
Fultz
was the slam dunk pick, and no one's going to criticize Danny Ainge at the time if he does that. Instead, he trades back, gets the extra asset and the Kings pick. Obviously, that didn't work the way you thought it would, but you know, you look at where they are right now, both of those guys developing exactly the way that you would hope if you're Danny Ainge. Do I wish they made a move at the deadline? Yeah, I do. But really, you're set up here to be a really good team for a long time. And again, it just seems like Tatum has taken that next step that you desperately wanted him to take. And I just go back to Kyrie Irving and what a disaster he was for the Boston Celtics. And man, I just think he poisoned that whole group last year. I really do. And you can say, oh, maybe the young guys weren't ready. I find that hard to believe because, again, they made it all the way to the Eastern Conference Finals. Both those guys looked like they were ready to make the next jump. Kyrie Irving comes in, and some of the comments, the way he acted on the court, the way he called people out off the court, I just think that whole locker room was toxic last year, and it was all because of Kyrie. Addition by subtraction for one of the guys that is clearly one of the top 10 most talented players in the NBA, I don't think as a face of the franchise, you can win a championship with him. You can if LeBron's also on the team and the Warriors have Draymond Green suspended and they kind of fall apart for the last 12 minutes of a game. But I don't think that that's a guy that you want to build your team around. I think addition by subtraction.
Dude, think about what we were talking about at this time last year, NBA All-Star Weekend. We were talking about Kyrie Irving being hurt, but going to play in the All-Star game, or being hurt, and I'm using air quotes, which are
didn't play in the two games leading into the All-Star break, and Ainge and company let him play in the All-Star game, and he openly flirts with Kevin Durant during the All-Star game and during All-Star weekend, and then says, "What? I can't believe people actually read into this stuff." Well, you know what? Fast forward to the summer, and Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant team up in Brooklyn. So I think everyone pretty much read the situation exactly like it was.
Totally.
Two max slots. Yep. You know where there are two max slots? Brooklyn.
Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Brooklyn. 1,000%. And in New York, too. But that didn't work out
just
so well.
All
for the
stuff, though. Even like the little stuff. Him walking in on that Sunday game. Me and you actually did a show, and it wasn't a July 4th, where
amazing,
he's walking
right?
in against Houston and saying, oh, I can't wait for this stuff to be over. It's like, dude, it's just. It must have been so draining for those guys in the locker room to have to deal with Kyrie Irving, to ask me in July, and you know, wait until the postseason, and then he just pulls a no-show in that Bucks series, totally checked out. And again, addition by subtraction for the Boston Celtics, and they're in a much better place here with Kemba Walker and those two young guys.
And think about where we are 1 year later. We're spending this weekend, in regards to Celtics topics, talking about Jason Tatum's progression.
No videos of Taco Fall saying to someone two max slots somewhere last night, by the way. So that was a win.
Real big win. Did you like Aaron Gordon jumping over Taco?
Yeah, that's
fun.
Mind it.
Yeah, it's fun.
Don't mind it.
Whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, but poor Taco, though. The guy is a sideshow. And that's the problem I have with the whole Taco Fall thing. Is just like, let the man be. Yeah. All right? Don't go crazy for him. Don't bring and good for him for having a good attitude about it. But the poor guy, really. He's not a sideshow. He's not there for your pure entertainment. Like, look at the tall guy. Mom, look at the tall guy. That's, I don't know. Yeah, that's what kind of bugs me about it.
Yeah.
Tweet here, at MattMcCarthy985. Aren't you guys assuming that too much that Tatum re-signs here? That shouldn't be a guaranteed expectation right now. Brian Robb, you cover the Celtics for Boston Sports Journal. You're producing the show today. Is that too much of an expectation?
Absolutely not. He will 100% re-sign here. I'm confident in saying that because no all-star level player coming off a rookie deal ever turns down a max extension. It just has never happened. Unless, I mean, you have guys like maybe Porzingis who threatened to, okay, maybe, you know, trade me. But look at the situation he was in. He was playing for a terrible team and didn't have confidence in that front office. That is not the case here of Tatum. Though my guess is they'll offer the extension this summer and he signs it.
I mean, he's a restricted free agent too, right? I mean, he's not going to be an unrestricted free agent,
right.
So it really doesn't have much.
He doesn't have leverage. The one thing he could do is, you know, okay, I want to play on a qualifying offer, which is just a one-year deal, and then you can hit the open market after that. But no player is going to risk 5 years of max money to get the open market when off your rookie deal. It doesn't happen.
I also don't think it's a situation like it was last year where it's miserable. It seems like these guys actually enjoy playing with each other this year, and that it's a good locker room. So I don't see why he all of a sudden now, like B-Rob said, would kind of make that left-hand turn and go with the qualifying offer.
Right, and if you give him 170 million reasons or whatever that, you know, max offer ends up being, wherever that ballpark ends up being, you know, what is it, 170 million, something like that?
Yeah, something right around there, absolutely.
You know, so what's really interesting is I, for the longest time, I really believed that, you know, Jalen and Jason were probably two guys that were going to be in trade talks and were kind of chips to get that next superstar, and he was going to do something similar to like he did in the 2007 offseason going into 2008, where you just flip a bunch of assets, bring in established guys, and you roll with that. And I think initially that probably was the plan, especially when he brings in Kyrie Irving.
Totally.
I feel like that's shifted now, and all of a sudden, B-Rob, I think that Danny Ainge's plan now is to build around those two wings. And Brown and Tatum are kind of the pillars moving forward, and all of a sudden you're going away from that plan of maybe flipping them for established guys. I feel like those are the guys that now are probably in the fold here for the long term.
Yeah, when you look at just their ages and what they're
and just the way
cost.
The league is set up now, too, right? Like, two wings that can do it on both sides of the ball is exactly what you're looking for. And he hit on both of those picks. Credit to Danny Ainge, too, because, again, you know, Fultz and Lonzo Ball go before Jason Tatum in that draft. Jaylen Brown was considered a reach at the time, going third overall, and Danny Ainge hit on both of those guys. He did.
And this is a pretty unique window right now, too, because you can afford those two guys and Hayward and Kemba Walker for this year, probably next year too. Even if Hayward opts in, you know, Tatum, that extension for him, it's not going to kick in for another 2 years. So you have this window where you can afford these guys. After that, one of those guys is probably going to have to go. And like you said, Tim, I think, you know, Tatum and Brown probably feel pretty safe. It's probably going to be one of the other two guys that eventually
it has
to
be Hayward, right? I mean, do you see Hayward being a long-term player here at this point, B-Rob? I'd be shocked.
Depends if what kind of discount he's willing to take
in
the next deal. Like, if he's Al Horford wanted all the money last year, we saw how that ended up with him. Maybe Hayward sees this situation and be like, okay, I'll play for $20, $25 million a year for and with a chance to win and put up big numbers.
I mean, I do like the three wings. I think that's a nice thing for the Celtics to have.
Yeah, you're back in on this. We talked about this a few weeks ago because there was a long time there where I think Celtics fans, rightfully so, felt that that wasn't the way to go. Three wings, you know, there's only one ball to go around. At least that's the way I felt for a long time. But you're back in on this.
Well, yeah, I think what's going to be interesting, too, is like down the stretch here, just in terms of the way they're set up, B-Rob, it's like you've got Kemba Walker who's got to be out there. You've got the three wings and you've got a big, like Marcus Smart, who's probably your best defender. And you saw this, you know, especially in that Houston game this past week, like there just wasn't a spot for him to play. Down the stretch, like you're taking your best defender out because you need the three wings out there. You need Kemba Walker out there too. So in terms of like playing time, it's going to be interesting to see what Stevens does down the stretch with those guys. But I do like when you have Hayward, Brown, and Tatum out there at the same time.
The chemistry is there. That was the question going into this year. Are there enough shots to go around? Can they kind of work together that in a way that clearly didn't happen last year of Kyrie and Horford? And it's, again, we haven't seen a ton of it because of the injuries, Matt, but like these guys are, you know, beating elite teams in games that both teams wanted a lot. Like we saw Thursday night, like that Lakers game a few weeks ago. And I don't think there's a better team. I mean, the Sixers are set up to beat the Bucks, but the Celtics have the kind of shooting everywhere that would punish the Bucks too. So if they can hit shots in that series, they'll have a chance.
Here is what is an absolute killer if you're Ainge, by the way, in terms of this whole rebuild and all the assets that he traded for. I went back and I looked at this last week. That Kings pick.
Kings pick.
Oh, that man. Kings pick. Well, if you go back to 2006, right? They had, I think that was like the 14th pick, and I wish I had it in front of me because I did last week and we just didn't get to it. Other than that, top 10 every single year. Last year, they hit. This year, they're right back down to where they were before. And now this Memphis pick that's top six protected, they pick third, and they take Jaren Jackson. They take John Morant second last year. And right now, currently, it's the 17th pick in the draft. And it's just like, man, you just needed them to bottom out one more time. And for the Kings to kind of spike for 1 year, and then you wind up with the 15th pick in Romeo Langford instead of what you could have potentially had, killer. Absolute killer.
All right, let's continue this discussion on the other side. The future for the Celtics, the immediate future for the Celtics, where they're headed this year. What type of ceiling you think this team has? Because it's trending in the right direction, and you should feel good if you're a Celtics fan. I do. 617-779-0985. It's Matt McCarthy and Tim McCone here on the Sports Hub.
Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub. Relatable, reliable, and even relentless at times. This is Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
For us, it's just our confidence is up right now. You know, last year was tough for everybody. You know, nobody could really get into a groove, and it was tough. You know, so this year, you know, everybody is just playing freely. We're just going out there and play like the way we know we can play, and not really thinking too much. And, you know, we're just letting our game talk for. So I think that's what it was. You know, last year for us, a lot of people didn't really know their roles. They didn't really know where they fit. This year, you know, we're all on the same page.
Marcus Smart on the difference between last year and this year. It's Matt McCarthy and Tim McCone. You're on the Sports Hub. Happy to have you alongside. 617.
Could have made that quote a lot quicker if he just said Kyrie Irving isn't here anymore. That's my belief.
That's true.
Yeah.
He talks about roles, and I think that is still one of the questions that the Celtics need to answer between now and the playoffs, because it seems like every night somebody's missing, right? So, you know, somebody else fills in. You've got two wings, you've got Smart, you've got Walker, you know, however it all breaks down. What's going to happen when this team is fully healthy? And it's a good problem to have, but again, you know, how do you define who's your closing five? And it's probably going to be very matchup-based, but I could see, you know, there being a few bumps in the road and, you know, the Celtics trying to figure that out. I don't think it's going to be like last year where it's going to tear the team apart, but tell me right now, Tim McCone, they're closing five, not their best starting five. They're closing five.
No, I think it's Kemba, your three wings, and then a big. And depending on the big,
no Marcus Smart.
No, I don't think Smart's out there with your closing five. And I don't know, B-Rob, maybe you disagree with that, but I think that that's kind of what they would go with. And ultimately, too, I mean, if you have one piece like Smart that's not necessarily out there, which, you know, does kind of stink because, again, he's your best defender. I just think the three wings and what they bring to the table is what you want out there. And it is a lot different than last year. And it's not just Kyrie Irving, as much as I hate to admit that, but it's the fact, too, that you had a bench full of guys that also thought that they were the guy. And
Marcus
Terry
Morris.
Rozier and yep. Marcus Morris and those guys. It was kind of addition by subtraction in terms of just clearing out that bench and not having the depth that we all thought was going to be a strength that ultimately turned into a negative. And Danny Ainge even talked about that this year and saying that, you know what, maybe I should have made a move to kind of clear out some of the guys that were on this team because it was just too much last year. I do think roles are pretty well defined on this team. We haven't seen them necessarily healthy playing at all as much as you would have liked. But again, I think it's pretty clear that they're going to go with the three wings, Kemba, and a big down the stretch.
What do you think, B-Rob? Is that their best closing five?
Yeah, it's Tice has just played well enough now where you have to consider him strongly for that closing five in most matchups. There are certain ones where you can get away with playing your best five guys and have Smart out there, but unless you're playing a team like Houston, if you're playing the Bucks, you can't afford to have Smart be your center. Maybe for a possession here or there, but not for like 5 minutes of crunch time. And yeah, so Tice has been the guy so far. I think he's going to keep getting shots. And to your point, Matt, I think it is, how Smart handles that will be interesting because he's having a good year too. He clearly wants to be on the floor in those situations. But there may be times where I'd say, if Jaylen Brown's not locked in defensively in a game, maybe Smart gets the chance over him.
Right. Or, Hayward too. And that's on Brad Stevens. And that's a lot of pressure, because that's a big decision at the end of the game. Who are your five guys? You're essentially playing matchups at that point, right? And I don't know, particularly if you're ahead, it's kind of tough to sit your best defender in those situations, right? I mean, that's a really tough call because isn't that why you have a guy like Marcus Smart? So that he's one of your final five guys on the floor and he's locking somebody down when it counts or making a hustle play or doing something like that. Like all the intangible factors that sometimes get mocked as part of Marcus Smart's game. But I mean, listen, facts are facts. It's true. That's what he does.
No, and I buy into some of the intangibles that he brings. But one of the nice things about these wings that you have is that they're two-way players, right? And that they are good defenders. So, it's not like you're taking them out and all of a sudden these guys are liabilities. I think defensively, you're still going to have good matchups there with the three wings that you'd have out there. Kemba obviously is an issue because of his size, but it's not like you're not going to have Kemba out there down the stretch. And then to be Rob's point, unless you're playing the Rockets who – Robert Covington was the biggest player in their starting five. What was it, Wednesday night? It was crazy. It was wild to see. I think Smart's the one that sits. Again, if one of those wings is maybe having an off night, maybe you can make that switch. But even though he does bring the intangibles, I think that it's a clear-cut thing that you sit him.
Do they have enough in the front court? I still feel like that's my big question with this team. Do they have enough?
Well, no. I don't think so. It would have been really nice if they could have brought in a big. And even if it was like a Bertans who I was all in on or somebody. And I'm not saying Andre Drummond because I understand that the salaries would not have worked in the Andre Drummond situation. Not that that would have been a good fit. But I look at the buyout market, and even if a Tristan Thompson becomes available, who's Tristan Thompson's agents? Clutch Sports, right? How did he get that monster contract with the Cleveland Cavs? Because he was LeBron's guy because he was a Clutch member, right? Mm-hmm. And signed with Clutch. So if he gets bought out, where do you think he's going to go?
L.A.
Boston or L.A.?
L.A.
Right? So he's off the table. So all the Tristan Thompson stuff, you can just stop right now. Because even if he gets bought out, I understand this might be the best situation for him. There's no way he's coming to Boston over L.A. So I just think that the opportunities there to bring in an impact big, even in the buyout market, are going to be few and far between because you're going to be dealing with a Houston. You're going to be dealing with the Clippers or the Lakers, and I just don't think that the Boston Celtics are going to be able to outperform it. You saw it with the Bucks and Marvin Williams earlier this week, right? He picked the Bucks. So I don't think you're going to be in a position really to help yourself that much in the buyout market. That was the one opportunity. And some of these picks that you have available to you aren't necessarily going to hit the way that you were hoping for, right? Mm-hmm. That Memphis pick, your own pick in this draft, probably the weakest since 2013. I understand Giannis was in that draft, but he was 15 and it was a lottery ticket at that point, right?
Totally.
I mean, it's...
You're talking about the Kelly Olynyk of the world taking him.
Anthony Bennett, who was sneaking pizzas at the NBA Combine in his room. I'm surprised that didn't work out, right?
Shocker, right?
Yeah. I just think if there was a time to make a move and flip some of those picks, this was the time to do it because, again, I don't think you're going to have success in the buyout market. Is that going to be the difference between you winning and losing a championship? Probably not, but I also think that this NBA season, it's the most wide-open league that we've seen in a long, long time, and there's no guarantees it's going to be open next year. Mm-hmm. So try to take advantage of it, because you have a team, when healthy, that's certainly capable of making a run here. Because I do think, while the Bucks numbers-wise are really, really good, and historically good by some of the numbers, I still think they're vulnerable. I really do. Like, outside of Giannis, none of those guys I'm really terrified right. of. And in the West, you know, it's not like you have a Golden State. I understand the Lakers have Davis and James and Kawhi and Paul George, if they're healthy, is certainly formidable. But I don't look at those teams as necessarily super teams at this point. But do they make a move this offseason and suddenly it's, and Golden State, you know, what are they going to look like next year now too? Because I do like that Wiggins move for him moving forward as well. So I don't know. Next year might be a lot harder to win a championship than this year is.
I think it's a fair second guess, and I love the way that Chris Gasper put it after the trading deadline. Oh, you know, you don't want to give up these picks. Oh, we wouldn't give up a first-round pick for player X, but would you give up James Young or RJ Hunter? When you actually apply names to the draft picks, not these treasured draft picks that the Celtics have hoarded over the years, and listen, I mean, they've been successful in doing it at times, but let's apply some names to the picks that the Celtics would have this year. It's like, oh, well, you can't give up the Memphis pick. Really? Why can't you? You want James Young? You want somebody like that? You want RJ Hunter or Fab Melo, or just like run down the list of guys at the end of the first round? It's such
no,
a
crap shoot. No, it's not the NFL draft, no. man. It's not the NFL draft. And the majority of the players later in the first round are not going to hit. Sure, you're going to have some outliers here sure. and there, but to have expectations that the 17th pick is going to be a guy that can come in and make an impact for you is naive. Like, there's a really, really good chance that he's not a player.
Right. That you know he's James Young or RJ Hunter or Fab Melo or.
And that's not necessarily a knock at the drafting of Ainge. Like, it's really hard to hit on picks at the end of the first round.
Almost nobody does it.
In Houston, who's one of the better GMs in the league, kind of has devalued late first round picks for that reason. And it kind of is like, well, you know what? In the second round, it's kind of a similar situation, and the contracts aren't necessarily guaranteed, so it's kind of better.
Right. There's only so many Klay Thompsons and Draymond Greens.
Right. And
there.
Why do you say, like, why do people remember that Tony Parker got taken late in the first round?
Because he's the only name you can remember.
Right. Exactly.
617-779-0985. I do remember RJ Hunter, though. Not for those reasons.
I was actually in on that pick. Whoops. Wrong about
yeah,
that.
Yeah. Not great. That whole draft, not, you know, Gershon Yabusele, one of those guys.
Yeah.
That's what essentially we're dealing with here. Yeah, trade those picks. All right, it's Matt McCarthy and Tim McCone. Brady Watch will continue here in a few minutes, but I do have to get McCone's thoughts on the league that everybody's all excited about. We're going to do that next. The XFL.
Love it.
Action continues today. And then, yes, we'll get into Brady Watch here on the Sports Hub.